From WBEZ Chicago and Illinois Public Radio, you're listening to Prison Cast. I'm Erin Allen.
Fellow citizens, we cannot escape history. Today, in this room, under the watchful eye...
On March 9th, 2011, then-Illinois Governor Pat Quinn stepped up to a podium in an ornate room at the Illinois State Capitol.
In our state of Illinois, we have tried over and over again to come up with a perfect system that makes no mistakes with respect to carrying out the death penalty. And we have found over and over again mistakes have been made.
In the early 2000s, the news in Illinois was filled with stories of wrongful convictions, exonerations, false confessions coerced by police. The headlines had undermined public support for the death penalty.
At this time, in this place, in this moment of history, the best step forward for the state of Illinois was to abolish the death penalty.
But now, 15 years later, the pendulum seems to be swinging back, at least on the national level.
The U.S. Justice Department is moving ahead to expand death penalty executions by reinstating lethal injection and offering options like a firing squad. NPR's Jacqueline Diaz.
One of the activists who has been instrumental in advocating against the death penalty here and nationwide is Sister Helen Prejean. Sister Helen first started counseling people on death row in the 1980s. Her story was the inspiration for the film Dead Man Walking, starring Susan Sarandon. I got to sit down with Sister Helen to hear why she's been motivated by this cause for decades. So we are at DePaul University, where you are participating in a celebration of the 15th anniversary of Illinois abolishing the death penalty. At the same time, about half of U.S. states still sentence people to death. I'm wondering if you can start by explaining, in a nutshell, why you are opposed to the death penalty.
Well, for one thing, I have accompanied 8 human beings to their deaths, their executions. And it's so different from being with someone in a hospital who's fading and dying of a natural death. This is a state-imposed death where a person's fully alive and then they're fully dead. And I've seen it close up. I also know all the mistakes with the death penalty. I know how selective it is, that it's almost always when white people have been murdered that the death penalty is sought. I know it's always poor people. I know that there are a lot of mentally ill people that get thrown into the net for the death penalty. And for all these reasons, but there's nothing like seeing it close up. And that's my mission, is to get it out there to the people, and I'm a storyteller, I'm not a lecturer, and I bring them close.
There are people, obviously, who support the death penalty, and what they say is that it could deter crime. I also know there are people hearing this who might think capital punishment is appropriate for people who commit the worst crimes. What do you say to that argument?
Yeah, well, first about the deterring, and that's kind of the way it started. Surely, if people are threatened with their own death, self-preservation will keep them from murdering others. But what we found out was people weren't reflecting at all when they go to murder somebody. There's no reflection of what might happen. Mm. So when we can look at the track records of the states that have done the most executions and look at the violence in those states, and you just see there's no correlation of stopping violence by executing people. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, the big moral argument that a lot of people have is the death penalty is appropriate. I had a victim's family say to me one time, my daughter is buried forever under the ground, and he's alive. Even if he gets life without parole, he can still call his mama for his birthday. Mm. He's alive and she's dead, and that's not fair, so he's got to die too. And then, of course, the moral question that comes up. Now, who deserves to kill him, and who's going to set the process in place to decide who should die for their crimes? And then you come to the Supreme Court in the Gregg decision of 76. And they said, it's only going to be for the worst of the worst murders. But you have a human society deciding what's worse for the worst. And almost always it's when white people are killed.
Before we got here today, we reached out to some folks who spent time on death row here in Illinois before it was abolished. One person, Anthony, is still incarcerated in a state prison. He wrote into us saying that
just being on death row felt like torture to him. And this is a quote from him. "I often say that I got off death row, but death row didn't get off me." Is this a sentiment you've heard before from people who have been on death row?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And let's just really get it clear that it is torture. The definition of torture in international circles is an extreme mental or physical assault on someone rendered defenseless. Mm. How do people justify it? You know what they do, including the Supreme Court justices? Look at what they did. Look at their crime. But human beings can always grow. There's a transcendence in us. And that was the dialogue with the Catholic Church about the inherent dignity in human beings, that we can always grow and we can always change. But people getting off a death row, it's built into your cells.
I've been talking to Sister Helen Prejean, a longtime advocate against the death penalty. Thank you.
Thank you.
Here at PrisonCast, we're all about listening to your ideas on how to make the show better. And one thing we've heard from people who have served time in Illinois is that you want to hear more success stories, stories that highlight the good things people are doing after they leave prison or jail. So today, we're introducing a new regular segment called Success Beyond Bars. And for our first installment, we're headed to the new Obama Presidential Center on the south side of Chicago. This spring, PrisonCast producer Lauren Frost met up with the center's new beekeeper, who told her about his journey from a jail cell to working for the former president.
It's dusk on a late spring day, and Thad Smith is standing on a dirt mound in the Obama Center Gardens. He says soon, this quiet spot will be like, and I quote, a goddamn airport.
Bees coming in, bees coming out, bees coming in, bees coming out. And they really don't care if you're walking by. They don't care. So we want to make sure that we don't put the bees where humans will interact on a regular basis. Because humans are humans will just think, oh no, you're bothering me. You're in my space. No, you're in theirs.
Smith is the owner of Westside Bee Boys. The company was selected as the beekeepers for the Obama Center and its two new hives of honeybees. But Smith says his journey here began over a decade ago, when he caught a couple criminal convictions. After he left jail, he got connected with Sweet Beginnings, which teaches beekeeping to people impacted by the criminal justice system. Sweet Beginnings made him an apprentice beekeeper, then head beekeeper. And in 2014, he started his own apiary company.
I look at it like this. When I opened up a beehive first time, boom! I experienced things that I never thought I'd experience. Like, I was like, this is the coolest shit in the world. And I'm doing it today.
Today, the first swarm of Obama colony bees is getting delivered. Soon, Smith's coworker, Janelle Dunlap, arrives with a plastic box filled with 5,000 insects. And then Smith fires up a portable speaker because presidential bees deserve a presidential welcome.
They don't like that.
They were not part of that music, huh?
No.
For what it's worth, these honeybees are Italian, I'm told.
We are not using a smoker today, are we?
No.
The next morning at 6:45 a.m., Smith and Dunlap meet back up at the Obama Center. It's moving day. They start carefully transferring rectangular frames covered in bees and honeycomb from the plastic box to the bee's new permanent hive.
Come on, we gotta keep moving.
Yep, all right. I'm sorry, I'm a slow beekeeper. Okay.
Moving is stressful. When the bees are stressed, they release a pheromone. It makes the air smell sharp, like a permanent marker. And when you work with bees, sometimes you get stung.
They got you.
You got me. All right, so everybody come look. This is what a stinger looks like.
On the tip of Smith's finger is a disembodied bee stinger, no bigger than the tip of a needle, and attached to a venomous sac.
Can you smell that?
Oh.
That's alarm pheromone. Smell that.
Oh.
That's alarm pheromone.
The Sharpie smell.
Yeah. See, it's.
It's like a sweet but sharp.
Yeah. Smell. Yes. That's exactly what it is. So when you smell that, get the hell up out of here.
The bees are all moved in, so we do get the hell out of there shortly after. As we walk away from the gardens, Smith talks about how important it is to find your passion, whatever it is. A few years ago, he taught beekeeping classes at the Cook County Jail, where he was once locked up. He wanted to show people there how to start a business, but also to get them out of their cells.
Man, it's lonely in them cells. It's, you know, sitting there looking at them four walls. So it was an opportunity to get out your cell and get in the real world and see some stuff.
His advice for other people serving time is to use that time wisely.
When you get out, you have to have a plan. You can't just show up and be like, the world owes me something. The world don't owe you shit. You owe the world something.
Smith knows that beekeeping, specifically, might not be for everybody. It requires a lot of time and patience. Also, it's pretty sticky. But he says, if you follow your dream, whatever it may be, you never know where it might lead.
I got senators in my phone book. I got congressmen. I got freaking aldermen. 15 years ago, I didn't know nobody. And within the next year, I would meet President Obama. Come on. Come on.
The Obama Presidential Center opened to the public last month. And Smith hopes as world leaders start visiting, they'll get to try some of his honey.
That piece was produced by Lauren Frost. We're going to let one last song play us out. This is Lean On Me by Bill Withers. It's requested by Perry at Western Illinois Prison, who says, quote, "We need to help each other, especially when we don't have family close by."
Sometimes in our lives, we all have pain, we all have sorrow, but if we are wise, we know that there's always tomorrow. Lean on me.
That's it for this special statewide broadcast of PrisonCast. Thank you for spending your afternoon with us. Let us know what you think and how to serve you better. Email prisoncast@wbez.org or send us a letter to WBEZ PrisonCast, 848 East Grand Avenue, Chicago, Illinois, 60611. We can also add you on Core Links. PrisonCast's executive producer is Lauren Frost. Our lead editor is Alex Keefe, and Robert Wildebor is our editor at large. Dave Miska engineers the show, and special thanks goes to Tracy Brown, Kate Walsh, and our partners at Illinois Public Radio. Thank you to our colleagues who contributed to this episode: Alina Edwards, Brian Munoz, Caitlin Washburn, Mariah Wolfel, Nader Issa, Shannon Heffernan, and our partners at the Marshall Project. You can find all our shows and stories at wbez.org/prisoncast. And be sure to listen to season 2 of the PrisonCast podcast, out now wherever you get your podcasts. People locked up all over the country can listen to the podcast for free on their tablets on the Adovo Education app. If you have a loved one behind bars, let them know they can hear the show anytime they want. Until next time, I'm your host, Erin Allen. Peace and love.
I just might have a problem.